From the latest on Caribbean cruises to kosher safaris, pilgrimages to Jewish Eastern Europe and award-winning wines and international cuisine in sun-drenched Tel Aviv. Sit back and enjoy the trip with the travel edition of the Jerusalem Post podcast.
Hello.
Good. I was going to say good evening, but that's really not fair because I wonder what time of day most people listen to this podcast.
I think most of our downloads are in the morning.
Yeah, in the morning, wherever those people are, it certainly comes
across. But it doesn't mean they necessarily listen to it.
They might not be listening to this at all now. For those of you who are listening, what are we going to talk about?
I've been away.
Again?
I didn't make it to our last podcast. I was having fun. Well, I wasn't actually having fun, but...
You were working extraordinarily hard on a very special mission, and it was?
I did get to travel, and I went to Dubai, but it wasn't, unfortunately, for a holiday. I was lucky enough to be included in the British government operation to help evacuate Afghanistanis from Afghanistan and away from the Taliban regime.
What were you doing?
I was effectively working in an airport. My job was to help with the evacuees who were coming in, make sure that they were wearing masks, that they knew where they were, what they were doing, make sure they were fed, and make sure that they understood that they were going to be going on a flight to the UK within the next 6 or 8 hours. Really, really hard work, really emotional stuff to see families carrying plastic bags with all of their possessions. I got to ride in an ambulance with a lady who was having a baby. I went to the hospital a few times with people that weren't well. It was so rewarding to be involved in something like that. Coming from a background where my grandparents were immigrants and refugees, to actually get the chance to do that with other people was a special moment.
I will take 10 seconds to say something in praise of Mark. Mark, what you did was actually incredible, and I, as your friend, am very, very proud of you. Right, that's enough talking about Mark. What are we doing in today's podcast?
We're going to Africa.
Again?
Yeah. We've been to Africa once, but, you know, if there are 5 continents and this is our 17th show, we should have been there 3 times.
Okay. Quiz question. How many continents are there?
About 7.
Yes.
It depends. Well, we're never going to Antarctica, I don't think.
We can work on it. Okay. We are off to Ethiopia in a moment. And after that, absolutely, we will be discussing mindful travel, mindful tourism and mindfulness. We'll be talking about it in India and yet again in Africa.
Oh, that's how 3 visits to Africa done.
There you go. We can tick that off. Now then,
shall we have a quiz?
Exactly. We haven't done that for a long, long time. So what we do is we ask a couple of quiz questions, which give you a bit of a flavour of what's going to be coming up on today's pod.
Question number one. Israel's flag includes a 6-pointed star. But how many points are there on the star of the flag of Ethiopia?
Question two. Mindfulness as a Western practice is founded on Zen. With which religion is Zen associated? Answers at the end of the podcast.
It's been a really tough period for most of the world's airlines, with many needing government bailouts to ensure their survival. Not so for Ethiopian Airlines, which might prove to have been the only profitable airline during the pandemic. The company's CEO, Tewolde Gebremariam, was in Israel recently, and David got the chance to sit down with him and understand a bit more about Ethiopian story and his own beginnings.
I have been with Ethiopian Airlines for 37 years. I have been also the group CEO since 2011.
When you were a little boy, did you dream about aeroplanes? Did you make aeroplanes? Was this something you always wanted to do?
Not really, not really. It's just by coincidence. I was a young student completing high school and joining a university. But at that time, things were not good. So there was a national military service. So I didn't want to go there. And the only choice for me was to start working. So when Ethiopian Airlines was looking for young people to train in our Ethiopian Airlines Training Center, now we call it Ethiopian Aviation Academy. So I joined there and I trained for about a year. And then I started and I'm still there.
How has the company changed in the years that you have been with the company, both as you started and also since you took over as CEO?
It's amazing. It's very, very amazing. It's not only amazing for those of us inside, but it's amazing for the whole world, because you can always divide the history of Ethiopian Airlines into two. The first 60 or 65 years, and then the remaining 10 or 15 years. The reason why I'm dividing that is the company has not grown as much in the first 60 to 65 years. But especially the last 15 years, but particularly the last decade, was phenomenal growth. And it has surprised the whole world. It has surprised us also. But it has also proved a lot of people wrong, because when we started Vision 2025 in 2011, it was like a daydream. Many journalists all over the world said that this is not going to be achieved, because at that time we used to have around 34 airplanes and now 130 airplanes. Our revenue was around $1.3 billion and now more than $4.5 billion pre-COVID. But surprisingly, even after COVID, now we are recovering faster than the rest of the world. I'll come back later. Number of destinations, international destinations, has grown from around less than 60 at that time, now to 127. It is really, really impressive and not common in the industry, because the industry has gone through a lot of challenges, as you may know. In the beginning, around 2011-12, there was $150 a barrel of oil, which has really challenged the airline industry. So we have passed that successfully. And then SARS, which is not as bad as the global pandemic that we have today, coronavirus, but it was also a problem. Then MERS, and then, which was really confined to Africa, but Ebola was also a big problem, you remember. We have also passed our own challenges, internal challenges. So, but even in these challenges, successive challenges, we have not stopped growing. But so one can say that we have grown compounded around between 20 to 30% per annum compounded.
You've done some incredible things during COVID. I should also say you kept flying to Israel the whole of this period. How did you go through that process? What did you do? What went through your mind and the minds of all your colleagues in those first days when we realized we've got a big problem on the hands?
The starting point of what we have done was a matter of survival. We had no choice. In order for us to survive as an airline, the only way out was to generate enough cash, enough revenue to survive. By March 2020, most African countries closed their borders. Europe has closed its borders, and the rest of the world, almost all. So we found more than 90% of our passenger services suspended. The average cash need to sustain the airline was around $200 million a month. So we had to find means of surviving. There was no hope of any bailout money for us from any source. So we had discussed it as a management. We evaluated the environment, the operating environment. As I said, passenger service was suspended. Two opportunities were emerging. The first one was cargo. Fortunately, in our Vision 2025, we have chosen the diversified model. So we have diversified the airline into cargo, into maintenance, into hotel, into catering. So it is a group of 7-8 business units, and one of them was cargo. So we have always been the largest cargo network in Africa and in the region. We knew that cargo was growing because, number one, the belly hold capacity of all airlines of the world was pulled out because passenger airplanes were not flying. So the air cargo was to depend only on the freighter capacity. So there is shortage of capacity, shortage of supply. On the other hand, demand was growing because PPE, the personal protective equipments like mask and Google and medical supplies were highly required in Europe, in USA, Canada, South America, and Africa. So we had to increase our cargo capacity. So we said, okay, why don't we remove the seats of the passenger aircraft? Some 30 years ago, when I joined the airline, we used to load cargo in the seats, on the seats, and we used to tie them. We started loading cargo on the seats, and we've done that for a week or something. But later on, we said, why don't we remove the seats? Then we consulted Boeing and Airbus, and they consented, and they gave us the support. And we were the first airline in the world to convert an A350 to cargo. So we converted about 25 wide-body airplanes. The second one was Israelis in Africa, Europeans in Africa, and Americans in Africa. Japanese, Koreans were stuck in Africa during the COVID period, and they were worried and nervous that the health services standard in Africa was not up to standard. They knew that. So they wanted to go back home and also to be with their loved ones during this pandemic. It was very difficult and expensive for governments to charter from each and every country to the US, Canada, Europe, and so on. So we came up with a very brilliant idea to collect these people from all over Africa and put them in Addis for the quarantine period in our hotel. 373 rooms, so we were going through the quarantine and then distributing them. When we distribute them to all over the world, 127 destinations, and we have never suspended any flight to any destination, by the way, just for your information, never. But we were loading cargo in the belly and people, passenger in the repatriation, we call them repatriation flights. So that was also a very good opportunity. So in both cases, you know, we did well by doing good because we did well for ourselves. We sustained the airline. We survived. And in fact, we made profit. We might be the only carrier in the world that made profit. I don't have the data, but it looks like. But at the same time, we did also good. You know, we saved lives by distributing PPE. And we got a lot of appreciation from head of states, from the foreign minister of the US, Israel, Canada, Spain, Portugal, Brazil, that I remember, and many others.
A lot of people listening to this, they might be fascinated to know that you have a Dreamliner called the Tel Aviv.
Tel Aviv,
which, yeah, I was told just before you came here, is the only plane in the world named after a city in,
yes,
Israel.
Yes.
Why?
The relationship between Ethiopia and Israel is a very long one. I mean, not government to government. Of course, government to government also very good relationship, but people to people. We have more than 100,000 Ethiopian Jews here in Israel. Christianity, Islam, and Judaism lived for many, many years, thousands of years in Ethiopia, peacefully coexisted. So because of this, the relationship between the two countries has been growing from time to time. And Israel has helped Ethiopia in many ways, many times. And Ethiopian Airlines has been flying to Israel for many, many years. Now, I think for most Israelis working in Africa or living in Africa, the most dependable route is Addis.
Why should anybody listening to this choose to fly Ethiopian, apart from everything you've said so far?
The product is, you know, modern airplane. Less carbon emission. Today in the 21st century, the most modern airplanes in our world are either 787 Dreamliner from Boeing family or the A350 from Airbus family. And we have both of them in our fleet, I mean, big numbers. So the average age of our fleet is around 5 years, while the industry is around 12 years. So you have a very premium product, modern airplanes. And, you know, the Ethiopian natural hospitality. Ethiopian people are warm and very hospitable. And we train our cabin crew in such a way that the airplane is their airplane. And it is like their home. And they are receiving guests for entertainment in their home. If you invite me as a guest to your house, you know how to treat me. But at the same time, they are also very proud of serving because it is their airplane. It's a combination of both. So hospitality, and the other is safety. Safety and security. And of course, the connectivity. You are in Tel Aviv today, you want to go to Abidjan tomorrow, for instance, Cote d'Ivoire, not many direct lines or connecting lines. So you choose, you go to Google and find out that the fastest and the best and the most direct route is Ethiopian.
Thank you so much for your time and joining us on the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for giving me the opportunity.
Ethiopian Airlines Fact File. Ethiopian Airlines was founded in 1945 and first flew internationally to Cairo in 1946. It is 100% owned by the government of Ethiopia. The Addis Ababa Bole International Airport is the major hub for Ethiopian Airlines and one of the largest airports in Africa. Its ultra-modern airport terminal was inaugurated on January the 21st, 2003. Ethiopian flies to 127 destinations, including Newark, Chicago, Washington DC and Houston, Toronto, London, Manchester and destinations all over Africa, Asia, Europe and South America. Ethiopian Airlines has a fleet of 130 aircraft, including 27 Boeing 787s and 16 Airbus A350s, with another 8 on order. Ethiopian Airlines offered 2 flights daily before COVID to Israel. The plan is to return to that shortly. Ethiopian Airlines was one of just 2 airlines that kept running their service to Tel Aviv throughout the last 18 months.
And now it's time for the latest travel news, brought to you by the Jerusalem Post podcast, Travel Edition. After a long delay due to COVID, Gulf Air, the national carrier of the Kingdom of Bahrain, announced the launch of its direct flights from Manama to Tel Aviv starting September 30th with 2 flights weekly.
Time Out magazine has just released the list of the 37 best cities in the world in 2021. Top this year is San Francisco, followed by Amsterdam and Manchester. Tel Aviv made it to number 8 on the list, named the funnest city in the world.
Israelis rank cancellation flexibility and a hotel's good hygiene measures the most important considerations when planning a vacation abroad. That's according to a survey of 504 Israeli travellers by Agoda.com. Getting a good deal on a vacation package is also a top priority.
Portugal and Sweden have banned entry to Israelis, including those who are vaccinated. The ban takes effect as Israel eases quarantine rules for returning travellers. Italy, Netherlands, Romania, Spain, the Czech Republic, Switzerland and France have decided to ban unvaccinated Israelis.
And Expo 2020, formerly the World Fair, launches on October the 1st, 2021 in Dubai. It was delayed by a year due to COVID, but the 6-month-long fair still expects 25 million visitors. It cost more than $7 billion to build. Rochelle Osoran and Dr. Dino Wijgorod promote a very different kind of travel. Zimbabwean-born Rochelle is a social anthropologist by training, a childhood educator and fitness professional, and she's also a yoga and Pilates instructor. And originally from New York, Dr. Dina is a clinical psychologist specializing in stress and anxiety. For 30 years, she's been investigating the worlds of mindfulness and meditation. First, Rochelle explains how it all began.
I was taking Dina's MBSR course, the first of her 8 courses that I've taken along my journey of training to be a mindfulness instructor. And at the same time, I was reading Eat, Pray, Love by Elizabeth Gilbert. And I said to Dina, what do you think of taking mindfulness on the road? And she said, great, Italy. And I said, no, India.
Yeah, and it started from there. You have to be very careful what you say in the world because you never know what you're going to get.
How would you best define mindfulness for our listeners and how does it differ from meditation?
It's a great question.
Thank you.
Mindfulness really means being very, very present in the world, experiencing things at this very moment without as many of the filters that usually get between us and our experience. So that, for example, if you're eating something and you're mindful of it, you're really having a full experience of what you're eating, as opposed to what we often do, which is on autopilot, where we're eating and reading and listening to the news and talking to everybody, and we miss the moment-to-moment experience. Of course, this is by choice. I mean, sometimes we will do more than one thing at a time, but other times we may notice that if we actually are more present, we may experience more of those moments more fully. And it even, according to the research and according to spiritual teachings for thousands of years, makes us happier. Now, one of the specific ways that you can train yourself to be more mindful is by using formal practices like meditation. So there's an overlap between the two, but they're not exactly the same. You can meditate and not be mindful, and you can be mindful without meditating. And when we take people on the trips, and one of the things I try to teach people all the time is to see if you can be more mindful, if that's obviously what you choose to do, whether you're traveling, whether you're home, can you be more fully alive?
I know that you take groups to India, and I'm sure that there is a strong link between the mindfulness, the meditation, the yoga and so on with India. Is that the only place you go at the moment?
No, we've done 10 Mindful India trips, and we've done one Mindful Africa trip, which was actually our last trip. We returned just before, you know, the world shut down. We have systems set up in both of these places. I went to India for the first time. It wasn't my first trip to India, but I went with my son before he was drafted into the army, which became our pilot trip for our Mindful India tours. And that's where I set up the itinerary for that particular area. I met with our tour agent, and we have a really incredible infrastructure in India and now in Africa. For India, it's such a huge country, and we're not the type of group that is traveling every single day to try and cover as much territory as possible. Our trips really try and focus on different regions. Yes, we will be flying because it is so vast and we do want the variety, but we really have a combination of touring famous sites and having meaningful encounters with the locals. So that includes going to the homes of our guides. We've been to a village, which has been an incredible experience, where we have been the only tour groups to be hosted by this village. We've had public tours with the Dalai Lama. It's important for us to learn about the lives and culture of the people, and not just see buildings and temples and even synagogues.
You mentioned Africa. Africa, of course, is also a big place. Are you talking several countries, just South Africa, your own, if I'm not mistaken, Zimbabwe, where you're from?
So we like to do the highlights. You know, very possibly this is going to be someone's only trip to Africa, for example. So what are the most important experiences in a specific smallish geographical region? So we did a safari in a private safari area, which was just so authentic. You know, I've grown up going on safaris every year, and this was really unbelievable. And of course, Dina's mindfulness addition to the safari experience so enriched it. We went to Cape Town, and then we flew to Victoria Falls in Zimbabwe, because that's one of the wonders of the world. And it was a really special experience where we combined that with a safari experience.
Can you give us a flavor of the social justice elements of your tours?
When we traveled to Varanasi, which is considered the holiest city in India, just outside of Varanasi, there is a project started by students of Banaras University. Varanasi used to be called Banaras. They put together a group called Women in Green, or the Green Gang, though that sort of had a negative connotation, where these women were all dressed in green saris, and they learned martial arts to defend themselves against domestic abuse, gambling. It was originally started because they didn't have toilet facilities, and they could only use the fields before sunrise and after it became dark. And it's not acceptable under anyone's terms. So someone in our group actually taught martial arts as well. So when we met with them, it was a real give and take. You know, they taught us what they knew, we taught them what this woman knew, and then we practiced, and it was such a special connection. And we learned about their challenges in their everyday lives. Another project we visited is Gabriel Project Mumbai, which was actually started by Jacob Stockman, who's an Australian who made Aliyah and lives in Modi'in. And that is a program of schooling for children in a very impoverished area, and medical facilities, and women's empowerment in the sense that women have started a business where they cater for the kids at school. So they earn some money that way.
Can listeners who are Kashrut and Shabbat observant join your programs?
One of the things that makes our group special is that we have people from across the entire range of Jewish experience, which is very unusual because most places, either groups are very religious or they're very secular, and there isn't much of a meeting place between them. So part of my responsibility as the mindfulness expert on the trip is also to serve as a kind of the spiritual director. So we make sure that we have Kabbalat Shabbat, and we have Kiddush on Shabbat, and when we've been in India, for example, during Purim, we have a whole Purim celebration. And the idea is, again, for people to really connect with their own spirituality. You know, when we're traveling in a country like India in particular, has a very rich spiritual tradition, it's also very interesting for us to explore our own and for people to really ask themselves questions about what they really believe in and where their whole lives intersect with the question of belief and spirituality, so that we try to bridge all of that. If someone doesn't want to participate, they don't have to. But it's very different from, unfortunately, the way a lot of society gets very splintered into, you know, my group and my this. And here we have a chance to really travel together and bridge some of those experiences. So that's been a very powerful part of the trip as well.
All sounds really, really exciting. How do our listeners get in contact with you?
People can reach us through our Facebook group, which is Mindful Tours, two words, or by contacting me through my email. That's my name, rachelleosseran@gmail.com.
That's rachelleosseran@gmail.com and Mindful Tours on Facebook. Dr. Dina Wijegrod and Rachelle Osseran, thank you so much indeed for being with us and sharing your experience and spreading the word about mindful travel.
Thank you for having us.
As we approach the end of the show, I'd like to say a big thank you to Tawaldi, to Rachelle, and to Dr. Dina for appearing on the pod.
We always take this opportunity to appeal to you to subscribe, to share, and if you would, if you've enjoyed the show, to write a lovely review at your podcast provider.
And now the answers to our quiz. Question number one. Israel's flag includes a six-pointed star. How many points are there on the star of the flag of Ethiopia? And the answer to that is 5, which represent the unity of the people of Ethiopia.
And question number two. Mindfulness as a Western practice is founded on Zen. With which religion is Zen associated? And the answer is Buddhism. Mark, I have to say before we sign off that it's been lovely to see you sitting in our studio because we've been on the road quite a bit. I haven't seen you. And I once again want to say congratulations on the work that you and the British and American governments did to try to help the people of Afghanistan. And it would be nice to think that some point in the future, they would also be able to share in the world of travel for fun rather than having to flee from certain areas.
Amen.
And on that note, it's a very happy new year as we've just been celebrating in Israel to all of you wherever you happen to be. And it's a goodbye from me.
And a shana tova and bye from me.
Bye-bye.